भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60, Krishna teases Rukmini, text number 32. Shri Shuka Uvacha, Saivam Bhagavata Rajan, Vaidabhi Parisantitva, Vaidabhi Parisantvita, Yadvatat Parihasotim, Yadvatat Parihasotim, Priyachag Bayam Jaho, Priyachaga Bayam Jaho. Shishuka Uvacha,
Shishuka Uvacha,
Saivam Bhagavata Rajam,
Saivam Bhagavata Rajam,
Vardabhi Parisantvita,
Vardabhi Parisantvita,
Gyatva Tat Parihasoktim,
Gyatva Tat Parihasoktim,
Priyachaga Bayam Joho,
Priyachaga Bayam Joho,
Shishuka Uvacha,
Shishuka Uvacha,
Saivam Bhagavata Rajam,
Saivam Bhagavata Rajam,
Vaidarbhi Parisantvita,
Vaidarbhi Parisantvita,
Gyatva Tat Parihasoktim,
Gyatva Tat Parihasoktim,
Priyachaga Bhayam
Joho, Priyachaga Bhayam
Joho,
Shishuka Uvacha, Saivam Bhagavata Rajan,
Vaidabhi
Parisantvita,
Gyatva
Tat Parihasoktim,
Priyachaga Bhayam Jaho,
Priyachaga Bhayam Jaho, Saivam Bhagavata Rajan,
Vaidabhi
Parisantvita,
Vaidabhi Parisantvita,
Vatat parihasoktim,
Priyachaga Bhayam Jaho,
Priyachaga Bhayam Jaho,
Shishuka
Uvacha,
Saivam
Bhagavata
Rajan,
Vaidabhi Parishampita,
Vatat
parihasoktim, Shukadeva Goswami said,
Sa, she,
Evam,
thus,
Bhagavata, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rajan, O King, Vaidabhi,
Queen Rukmini,
Parisantvita,
Parisantvita,
fully pacified. Gyatpa.
Gyatpa.
Understanding.
Understanding.
Tat.
Tat.
His.
His.
Parihasa.
Parihasa.
Spoken in jest.
Spoken in jest.
Uktim.
Uktim.
Words.
Words.
Priya.
Priya.
By her beloved.
By her beloved.
Jaga.
Jaga.
Of rejection.
Of rejection.
Bayam.
Bayam.
Her fear.
Her fear.
Jaho.
Jaho.
Gave up.
Translation
by Disciples of His Divine Grace, E.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shukadev Goswami said, O King, Queen Vaidarbhi was fully pacified by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understood that His words had been spoken in jest. Thus she gave up her fear that her beloved would reject her. Text number 33. Smiling bashfully as she casts charming, affectionate glances upon the face of the Lord, the best of males, Rukmini spoke the following, O descendant of Bharat. Text number 34. Sri Rukmini said, Actually, what you have said is true, O lotus-eyed one. I am indeed unsuitable for the almighty personality of Godhead. What comparison is there between that Supreme Lord, who is the master of the three primal deities and who delights in his own glory, and myself, a woman of mundane qualities whose feet are grasped by fools. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami lists the faults Lord Krishna had described in himself that he claimed disqualified him from being Rukmini's husband. These include incompatibility, fearfulness, taking shelter in the ocean, quarrelling with the powerful, abandoning his kingdom, uncertainty as to his identity, acting against ordinary standards of behaviour, having no good qualities, being praised falsely by beggars, aloofness and lack of desire for family life. The Lord claimed that Rukmini had failed to recognise these bad qualities in him. Now she begins to respond to all the Lord's statements. First, she responds to Krishna's statement in text 11 of this chapter, Kasman no vavarshe shaman. Why did you select us, who are not equal to you? Here, Srimati Rukmini Devi says that she and Krishna are certainly not equal, for no one can be equal to the Supreme Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further points out that in her extreme humility, Rukmini is identifying herself with the Lord's external energy, which in fact is her expansion, Rukmini being the goddess of fortune. Omagana Chimananda Sya Janjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umlitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Swarma Bhagadamayam Dadati Swabhadam Tikam E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Hare Krishna, Tapta Kanchana Gorangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Rishabhanu Sutta Devi, Pranamami Hari Priya, Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu, Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadada, Shri Vasari Gaurabhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Sri Rukmini said, Actually, what you have said is true, O Lotus Eye One. I am indeed unsuitable for the Almighty Personality of Godhead. What comparison is there between the Supreme Lord, who is master of the three primal deities and who delights in his own glory, and myself, a woman of mundane qualities whose feet are grasped by fools? So, some nice exchanges going on between Krishna and Rukmini. This is after Rukmini has been pacified by the words of the Lord, after he'd in jest had been speaking harsh words to her. But as we know, the whole reason that Krishna had been speaking these words to Rukmini in the previous verses is because he was wanting to make her irritated. he was taking a great pleasure in the fact that he was going to try and irritate Rukmini. So Rukmini obviously was quite devastated by these words that Krishna had spoken. In a sense, he was suggesting that they had become divorced. And this is at a stage where Rukmini had children, and she was old enough to be a grandmother. And Krishna saying, "We might as well get divorced, and these are the reasons why we're going to get divorced for." So now Rukmini has realised that Krishna was just joking with her, as we were reading in previous verses that this is one of the rasas of grihastha life, is exchanging joking words between the husband and the wife. This is the greatest pleasure that worldly householders can enjoy at home, says in the Bhagavatam. So Krishna exchanging these joking words with Rukmini. Now she has realised Krishna was just cutting a joke with her, and now she's responding to him. Now she's starting to churn a bit of rasa back with Krishna. But very clever the way she does this, because everything Krishna had said was as being his disqualification for marrying Rukmini. Now she's going to turn those words around and actually use them as a way of glorifying Krishna. They're very, very expert. So in this this particular text here, saying that Krishna has actually, he has no equal. What comparison is there between the Supreme Lord, who is the master of the primal deities and who delights in his own glory? So she's refuting here, and from text 11, where Krishna is saying, "Why did you select us who are not equal to you?" So it's an interesting point here, which Rukmini is bringing up, saying it's actually true that you do have no equal. And in the coming next coming text, she'll continue to refute every point that Krishna said. So this point here of Krishna having no equal is it's quite an interesting point of meditation. I was thinking, how is it that Krishna does have no equal? Why is it Krishna has no equal for? Why is Rukmini making this point? So in the Nectar of Instruction, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this point is elaborated on a bit more, how Krishna actually does have no equal. As we know, in the section of the Nectar of Devotion, it talks about the different qualities of Krishna. These are very, very good points to meditate upon, Krishna's different qualities, because obviously these qualities are what attract us to Krishna. We are attracted to somebody because of their qualities, just like we see Rukmini was initially attracted to Krishna. Not because she had actually physically seen him, but she'd heard about Krishna, and through hearing about Krishna's qualities and his personality, she became attracted to him and fell in love with Krishna just through hearing about him. So it is qualities which attract us to somebody, all said and done. As we know that that physical beauty is very, very shallow. If someone's attracted to somebody because of just physical beauty, we can see relationships which are based on these things in the material world, they don't last. They're very superficial. Real attraction is based on quality. So in the Nectar of Devotion, we can read and meditate upon these qualities of Krishna. And it's explained that the first 50 of those qualities, I haven't memorised them. I know some of them. I know one devotee in New Zealand memorised them. There's some way of memorising them. But one of those, actually, Prabhupada explains out of those first 50 qualities that these can be found partially even within human beings, especially one who's cultivated Krishna consciousness. Then 50 of these qualities can be found within a jiva, an ordinary jiva. And one of those, out of those 50, one of those qualities is that in relationship to Krishna, is that he is controlled by love. So obviously ourselves, we know within our own experiences that we become very endeared to people who show us love and affection, like our family and friends, people who generally have concern and care for us and do things for us, and we become endeared to them. So similarly, just as we have this quality, this originates from Krishna, this quality. Krishna is also controlled by the love of his devotees. And we can see in this pastime that we've been reading about with Rukmini, it exemplifies how Krishna is under the control of Rukmini's love. When Krishna spoke the joking words with her and she became devastated by those words, Krishna realized, oh, she has so much love and affection for me that I must pacify her. So he picks her up and strokes her face and speaks very kind words to her, because Krishna is controlled by her love. Obviously, it's the same with when Krishna was in Vrindavan, that he's completely sold out to the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna completely will do anything for the residents of Vrindavan, and they'll do anything for him. That is the nature of their relationship. So that's one of the 50 qualities of Krishna. And it's explained further that beyond those 50 qualities, there are another 5 qualities which can partially be found, manifest partially, sometimes within Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And these are interesting, I guess, qualities to meditate upon, because it's separating Krishna from the ordinary jivas, ordinary living entities. We understand how Krishna isn't actually equal to normal jivas, living entities. So with those 50, out of those 5 qualities, it's explained, I wrote them down because I hadn't memorised them either, but 5 of those qualities is, he has inconceivable potencies, his body generates unlimited universes, he's the original source of all incarnations, gives salvation to the enemies that he has killed, and, actually, sorry, I've jumped ahead here. So those qualities, they're found within Narayan, but previous to that, prior to these 5 qualities, which makes up 60, there's another 5 qualities, which Krishna is changeless, or nirguna, he's all-cognizant, ever-fresh, and Satchidananda, and Yogeshvara, which means he controls all mystic powers under his control. So, I mean, to further elaborate on those points, with Krishna's being changeless, means that Krishna's constitutional position, it doesn't change. In the material world, we find all the living entities, our position is always changing from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. The body is always changing. We have one body in this lifetime, we die, and we take on another body under the control of the modes of material nature. So Krishna's position doesn't change. He's always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, always in a position of being absolute truth, unchanging. So absolute truth means something which is true in the past, present, and will continue to be in the future. It's absolute, it will never, never change. So Krishna's position as Supreme Personality of Godhead will never change. It's always been that way. He's the Supreme Being. So he is changeless. We can also find the quality of being all-cognizant. I mean, there's many nice examples we can find of Krishna being all-cognizant. One example given of in the Nectar of Devotion is the pastime when Draudan sends Devasa Muni with all his disciples to the Pandavas who are staying in the forest. And Draudan, being very, very envious of the Pandavas, because Devasa Muni is a great sage, but also he's well known for becoming angry very easily. There's a bit of a bad temper on him sometimes. So Duryodhan thought, okay, this is how I'm going to upset Devasa Muni. I'll send Devasa with all his disciples, something like 10,000 disciples, to visit the Pandavas in the forest, and I'll make sure that he arrives just as they've finished their lunch, so there'll be nothing to feed him and his disciples. So Krishna, being all-cognizant, being the super soul present within all hearts, knew the intent of Duryodhan. So he came to the forest just after lunch had been finished, because Draupadi was going, oh, no, what am I going to do here? Because Devasa just turned up, all his disciples. Krishna manifested on the scene, and as Devasa and his disciples were taking bath before they had lunch, Krishna took one small morsel left over from one of the cooking pots, and by taking that morsel, Krishna being the root from which everything comes from, because he was satisfied by that small morsel, Devasa Muni and all his disciples also suddenly felt they had full bellies, and they realised, oh, we don't have an appetite. So then they became worried, thinking, oh, what are we going to do here? Because we may upset the Pandavas, because they're going to cook this feast for us, and now we can't eat it. So they took off and made a run for it, but didn't want to upset the Pandavas. But it's an example of Krishna being all-cognizant. He knows what's going on within the heart of all living entities. excuse me. So Krishna is also ever fresh. One of Krishna's qualities that he's Navayoganam, ever fresh. Also Krishna's, in fact, anything in relationship to Krishna is explained is actually ever fresh. So his name, his pastimes, hearing about Krishna, all these things are ever fresh. We can see that by talking about Krishna, Krishna appeared, 5,000 years ago, and people have been talking about Krishna's pastimes for 5,000 years without getting sick of it. So this is the nature of hearing about Krishna, that it's ever fresh. Hearing the Shastra is ever fresh. There's always something new or some deeper realization to be had. So hearing about Krishna's pastimes, reading the Shastra, talking about Krishna amongst the devotees, it's ever fresh. There's always some nectar to be had there. And Krishna explains that point in the Bhagavad Gita, that this is one of the qualities of the devotees, that they take great satisfaction and delight by always conversing with each other about topics of Krishna. It's ever fresh. Whereas compared to material subject matter is very, very dry. You know, we can only talk about material subject matter for so long until it becomes very, very dry and very, very boring. You know, you can only talk about the football so much, or the what's on the TV, or what's going on the latest soap opera. You heard about the latest thing going on in Neighbours, or The Young and the Restless, whatever it is people watch these days. It is very dry, very, very boring. You can see, actually, every day there's a new newspaper being printed every day. For every day of the week, seven days a week, 365 days a year. They have to make a new paper every single day of the week because people read it once and they throw it away. So it's so wasteful. Whereas the Bhagavad Gita, we can just keep reading and reading and reading over and over and over and over again. I think Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur made the comment that there's enough information from the spiritual world to have a newspaper every day about the affairs of the spiritual world, and you could keep reading that newspaper and over and over and over again, just like we read the Bhagavatam over and over and over again, or the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We can keep reading these books over again because it's spiritual subject matter. So there's no limit to the amount of fulfillment and depth of realization you can get by reading the Shastra. So this is one of Krishna's qualities, ever fresh. Krishna also has a body of Satchitananda, which means his body is full of Sat, eternity, Chit, knowledge, and Ananda, bliss. Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So his body is made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. There's no difference between Krishna's soul and his body. They're the same thing. Whereas with us, there is a difference between our body and our soul. There's a difference between matter and spirit. Whereas in Krishna's form, it's actually made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Whereas explained in the material world, it's the opposite. It's asat, achit, and nirananda, which means it's temporary, full of ignorance, and full of suffering. So these qualities are not found within Krishna because his body is blissful. Maybe, you know, imagine that, just having a body which is made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, made of ananda, full of ananda. So this is the nature of the spiritual realm in Krishna's body. And also Krishna, Krishna's names is called Yogeshvara, which means that he is the master of all mystic powers. So we know that there's, I think it's something like 8 different mystic cities that yogis try to attain, like becoming lighter and lightest, small and smallest, being able to reach things in far off distant places and so forth. So all of these mystic powers, they're found within Krishna. So those are 5 qualities which separates Krishna from the normal living entities, the jivas. And as I was reading before, there's 5 more qualities which further separates Krishna also from the demigods, because 5 of those qualities we're talking about, as I was saying, are sometimes found within Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva to a degree. So there's another 5 qualities which are found within Krishna's Narayana expansion, which are not found within Brahma or Lord Shiva or any of the demigods. So Krishna has inconceivable potencies. So as we know, Krishna is present within the hearts of all living entities, and also present within the atom as well. And we find within many of Krishna's pastimes, he manifests how he has inconceivable potencies, just like with the Brahma Vamohana Lila, the bewilderment of Lord Brahma, when Lord Brahma had was interfering with Krishna's pastimes, and he decided that because Lord Brahma was a bit proud and thought, I'll try and, you know, disturb Krishna's pastimes. So he stole away all the cows and the cowherd boys and hid them in a cave. And then it was explained that they were there for like a moment of his time or a year of earthly time. And Krishna, realizing what had gone on, expanded out into the form of all the calves and the cowherd boys. So when Lord Brahma came back to see what was going on, he's saying, let's see what's going on within Krishna's pastimes. And he's up to some mischief. And then he became completely bewildered because he just couldn't understand how it was that he'd taken away the calves and the cowherd boys, but here they were again. And also he noticed that the calves and the cowherd boys, when the mothers of the cows and the cowherd boys saw these expansions, they became even more affectionate towards them because they were Krishna. And because they were Krishna, the cows, upon seeing their calves and the mothers of the cowherd boys seeing them, became even more and more ecstatic and blissful because it was Krishna. So Lord Brahma became completely bewildered about how Krishna could be doing this, how Krishna's potencies were able to do this. So all of these expansions in the forms of the cows and cowherd boys were Krishna and Vishnu Tattva expansion. So this is some of the potencies of Krishna. Inconceivable potencies can completely bewilder Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma has four heads, and even with four heads, he was still completely bewildered. So what to speak of us, normal living entities, who just have one head with a very feeble brain? How can we understand Krishna? So even though Lord Brahma is bewildered, then what to speak of our chances of understanding Krishna? Just like this, with the scientists try and analyze everything and try and understand if there is a God, then how can there be a God? Because they can't understand. They're trying to analyze things and understand where the root source of everything comes from, but they become completely bewildered by it and come up with all different theories of where the universe came from and quantum physics and all these complicated sort of things, when actually they're bewildered. They're actually completely bewildered. That Krishna says that people whose knowledge is stolen by illusion and those who are bewildered cannot understand him. So we can see this is another one of Krishna's bewildering potencies in the form of Maha Maya, that this potency just bewilders the living entities, covers them over so they can't actually understand Krishna's position. So inconceivable potencies emanate from Krishna's body. Also, Krishna's body generates unlimited universes. This is another one of quality 57 talked about in the Nectar of Devotion, that from Mahavishnu, which is an expansion ultimately coming from Krishna, as Mahavishnu is in his mystic sleep called the Yoga Nidra, unlimited universes emanate from his breathing. Unlimited universes, and then further into those, each one of those universes emanating from Mahavishnu's body, another expansion of Vishnu enters. And then from that comes Lord Brahma, and then the whole material universe, all the different planetary systems and so forth come about. So it's quite a fascinating point to meditate upon about Mahavishnu as he's sleeping. This is as he's sleeping that all these universes are emanating from his breathing, from the skin pores and from his breathing. So it's explained that each universe is just like one mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds. So if you ever see a bag of mustard seeds, I mean, you couldn't count them. There's the thousands and thousands, millions of them in just one bag of mustard seeds. So this one universe we're in is just like one mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds. Quite inconceivable. Kind of blows the mind out a little bit when you think about these things. You can't material intelligences can't work it out. So this is one of the qualities of Krishna's Mahavishnu expansion. Krishna is also the original source of all incarnations, so everything comes from Krishna, including all incarnations. It was explained in Advaitam, Achyutam, Manadam, and Antarupam, that there are unlimited expansions coming from the Supreme, but Krishna's two Bhagavan Swam is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna is the Swam Bhagavan. He's the original source from all these other incarnations. So Krishna with the flute, standing in the threefold bending form, that is the original form of Godhead. and everything else, all other incarnations, they all come from that original form. So that includes Matsya, Lord Nrisimha, Hayagriva, all the Vamana, they all come from Krishna. He's the original from which everything comes from. So this is Krishna's unique position. So you can find that's within modern-day India, that there's a lot of confusion about these things, who is the Supreme Being. And not even in modern India, but also even in the time of Krishna's presence on the earth 5,000 years ago, that during the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, the reason he performed that sacrifice for was so he could prove that Krishna is the Supreme Personality. So, as we know, the famous story that they were, when it came time to offer worship to the most respected person there, that even some of the, even though the great sages were there, demigods were present there, they couldn't work out who to give first worship to. And it wasn't until, obviously, that Krishna's devotee, I think it was Sahadev, spoke up and established Krishna's supremacy as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it takes, you have to be a devotee to really appreciate and fully understand Krishna's position in relationship to everything else, where the demigods fit in, where all the great sages fit in. You have to be a devotee or a Vaishnava to fully understand Krishna's position through the Vaishnava Shastras. So we understand that Krishna's quality is that he's the ultimate source from which everything comes from. That is his unique position. So Krishna also is able to give liberation to the enemies he kills. We can find in so many pastimes in the Krishna book that so many demons were killed by Krishna. But like Putana, as a famous example, came to kill Krishna by offering Krishna her breast, but Krishna accepted her breast and her as a mother. So by killing Putana, by sucking at her life air, she actually attained a position in the spiritual world of being one of Krishna's caregivers or one of Krishna's mothers. So all the demons who were killed by Krishna were actually benefited by it. And sometimes people think, oh, why do you worship this god for, who's actually, he's like some sort of sadomasochist. He goes around cutting off people's heads and killing women and stands in the middle of a battlefield. I mean, what sort of a god is that? So we understand that Krishna is all good. So Krishna's killing is also good as well. It benefits those who are killed by Krishna. Not that Krishna is some malicious at all, but Krishna understands that they're going to be benefited by him killing them. Like with Shishupal, Krishna chopped off Shishupal's head because Shishupal was so envious of Krishna's position and was blaspheming Krishna during this just before the Rajasuya sacrifice. So Krishna cut off his head, and so Shishupal actually explained his the jiva left Shishupal's body and merged into Krishna's body. So Krishna is merciful to everyone. Krishna is merciful to everyone, including the demons who were killed by him as well. So Krishna also, one of his qualities is that he is able to attract even the Brahmavadis or the impersonalists. So there's many nice examples of how Krishna, in his Narayana expansion, was able to attract the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras are young boys or great yogis in the bodies of young boys, and they were attracted to, I think, the Tulsi leaves that were offered to the feet of Lord Narayana. So this is the potency of Krishna, or one of his expansions, is that it can attract all living entities, including the impersonalists. Even, I think, Shukadev Goswami is another good example of that, that he was an impersonalist. And when he came out of the womb after 16 years, he was the son of Vyasadev. And upon hearing the recitals of Bhagavatam by Vyasadeva, he became attracted to Krishna, even though he was actually a Brahmavadi or an impersonalist. So this is the potency of hearing about Krishna. Just by hearing him, the living entities become attracted to him. So those are the five qualities which separate Krishna from even the demigods. And there's four other qualities which are found within Krishna alone, not even found within any Vishnu, Tattva or Narayana expansion. The four qualities are found, obviously, primarily within Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. So those are, obviously, his beauty, his flute playing, his loving associates, and Anyone? Anyone? His pastimes, yeah, his lila. Yeah. Very, very sweet. So these four qualities are found only within Vrindavan, which is why above all other of Krishna's pastimes, that the Vrindavan pastimes are the most superior, even to the pastimes we're hearing about in Dwarka here, that the Vrindavan pastimes, these four qualities are only found there. So even it's explained that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, even she is attracted to Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. Even she wants to take part in the rasa dance. Obviously, out of all of Krishna's leelas, the rasa leela is the most famous. So even the goddess of fortune, she's attracted to this rasa leela, but because of her particular bhav, of being the goddess of fortune of the opulences, that bhav doesn't enable her to enter into the rasa leela. That is even a pastime where Lord Shiva took on a form as Gopeshvara, where he took on a form of a gopi, so he was able to take part in the rasa dance. So even the demigods are attracted to this rasa leela as well. So that is the exalted position of these Vrindavan pastimes and these four qualities which Krishna manifests within Vrindavan. Obviously with Krishna's flute playing, many times we hear about the effects of Krishna's flute playing. Like Keshava Prabhu was talking about yesterday, that when Krishna plays the flute, all of the individual devotees, they can hear their name being called by Krishna's flute playing. And so many wonderful things take place when Krishna plays his flute, saying that birds stop flying in the sky, that the rivers begin flowing backwards, stones begin to melt. So many things just through Krishna's flute playing. It's wonderful, wonderful, beautiful flute playing. And also with Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan, there's obviously a unique rasa between the Brijvasis and Krishna, which is that degree of love, or that intensity of love, is not found anywhere else apart from within Vrindavan. So this rasa is very, very exalted and is only manifest within Vrindavan, which is superior to the love even found to the residents in Dwarka. It's a higher form of rasa. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna is performing his youthful pastimes as a young boy, as a young cowherd boy. So the residents from Vrindavan are able to see and take part in these Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna as a young cowherd boy, which are very, very, very sweet. With the cowherd boys and Giriraj is there, Govardhan Hill. So many wonderful, wonderful pastimes take place, and the residents of Vrindavan are able to take part in these pastimes as well. So very, very, very special. And also Krishna's exquisite beauty. This is Krishna's unique position in contrast to all the other expansions and avatars which come from Krishna, is his exalted beauty. Krishna is so beautiful, it's explained that when he sees his own reflection, he's attracted to his own reflection. It's explained one reason why Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya, because he'd seen his own reflection and was stunned by his own beauty. Thinking, wow. He couldn't believe his own beauty, and he said, well, how can I taste this beauty? How can I experience this beauty that which Radharani sees within me? So this is one of the reasons that he came in the form of Lord Chaitanya, to experience his own beauty and his own attraction to himself that Radharani experiences. So Krishna's beauty, very, very, very wonderful. His own, it's explained that his reflection is non-different from him. So by Krishna seeing his reflection, it is Krishna. So inconceivable. So Krishna is very, 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 very beautiful, very attractive. So these are the four qualities which are only found within Krishna with the Swayam Bhagavan form, which separate him from everybody else. So this is Krishna's unique position. So this is why Rukmini is saying that Krishna has no other equal, because of these qualities which are found uniquely within Krishna. So when we compare the jivas to Krishna's position, we can see he has no equal, even amongst the demigods, amongst the great sages. No one can compare to Krishna's greatness. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, Rukmini is turning around what Krishna said. Krishna said, oh, why are you marrying me for, when actually I don't have any, there's no one. So I'll look back to the exact verse to see what it says in text 11. Krishna says, since your brother and father offered you to them, why did you reject the king of Chedi and all those other suitors who stood before you, maddened by Cupid? Why instead did you choose us, who are not at all your equal? Very, very clever how Rukmini has turned around what Krishna has said to him and saying, it's true, actually, yeah. No one is your equal. And she explains these reasons why. So in the nectar of devotion, we can meditate upon that point, why Krishna has no equal for. What makes Krishna so superior, in his position superior to everybody else within the universe? And for devotee, it's very ecstatic when we understand Krishna's position. Because someone who's envious and they hear about Krishna's being unequal, they become agitated, become very angry. Whereas to a devotee, we want to establish that Krishna has no other equal, that he is the supreme being. He's the ultimate supreme person of Godhead with no challenger at all. So Rukmini is very, very expertly establishing this point. And the next verses, over the next maybe 10 verses, she will point by point go through refuting each point Krishna said about why he shouldn't be married to her for. So these pastimes are very, very, very sweet. Very, very special pastime, this pastime with Rukmini. Vishwambha Madhava Swami saying, very charming. Very, very charming. So we'll stop there and ask if there's any points or questions at all from what we're talking about.
When we're talking to a Vaishnava, for another Sampradaya, for instance, the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, how do we, we have to stick to Prabhupada, so Prabhupada's standard that Krishna is fine. At the same time, we cannot offend them by, saying that it's not what their scriptures say. So how do we reconcile these two points?
With the Sri Sampradaya, just that they have a different emphasis on in terms of worship. I think it's more Lakshmi Narayan worship. So also we are worshipping Lakshmi Narayan as well. Like Prabhupada says in his books even, that worshipping the deity in the temple is actually in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. So what we're trying to do is obviously, ultimately the goal of our sadhana is to cross over that mood of awe and reverence and come to the Raganuga platform, or spontaneous love of Godhead. So when we interact with other Vaishnavas, we offer them more respect because they're Vaishnavas, and they're devotees of Lakshmi Narayan, and Narayan obviously is Krishna, so we offer them more respect. And obviously we don't go out of our way to try and defeat them like that, because we respect them as Vaishnavas. We stick with our Sampradaya and our emphasis. We're following in the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So obviously Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. Not all other Sampradayas necessarily accept Lord Chaitanya as being Krishna, but we're following in the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya is emphasises a certain mode of worship for us Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So we offer all respect to other Vaishnavas, but still we follow in the mood of Lord Chaitanya like that, and try and establish that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whether they accept or not, that's really up to them. But we emphasise Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, and the Shastras reveal that to us as well as a hidden incarnation. Whether they accept or not, that's a different story. But we present Lord Chaitanya as being Krishna, and we follow in his mood. So that's maybe one way of approaching it, is presenting Lord Chaitanya, saying, well, do you know about Lord Chaitanya's position, and present it from a Shastric point of view as well. Okay.
What is the difference between
Yoga
Maya Shakti and
Maya Maya? Well, Yoga Maya is Krishna's internal potency, which arranges all of his pastimes, and Maha Maya is Krishna's external potency, which oversees, or Durga, she is Maha Maya, she oversees the material realm. So Durga's job is to be the prison warden and ensure that the jivas who are in the material world are being punished for their rebelliousness against Krishna. So when one becomes purified, one comes under the influence of Yogamaya, or Krishna's internal potency. Whereas in the external potency, we're controlled by the Mahamaya. It's interesting because at all times we're going to be controlled by one of Krishna's potencies, but it's whether it's going to be the Yogamaya or the Mahamaya is up to the desire of the living entity. So an impure consciousness, maha maya, will control us. When a consciousness is purified, then yoga maya will control us. So when we read Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, that's going on under the yoga maya influence.